Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, Episode 68, Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode 6, Trials and Tribulations.
I'm picking up a massive surge in chronotone radiation around.
What happened?
I don't know, but we've dropped out of warp.
Sensors are coming back online.
Benjamin, something's very wrong. According to the navigational computer, we're over 200 light years from our last position.
We're decloaking.
Someone's activated the transporter.
Deactivate it and get us back under cloak.
I'm picking up another ship, dead ahead.
Can you identify it?
Not yet, but it's close. Very close.
Chief, I need that view screen.
I think I've got it.
The Enterprise.
Arn Darvin.
Arn Darvin, our old friend.
It makes more sense to be Arnie. Arn Darvin.
Arn Darvin. Well, he is a Klingon.
It's not even a Klingon name.
Yeah, but he's in disguise as a human.
There's not an apostrophe in that name at all.
He's in disguise as a human. That's his human, you know, his human fake name. But they didn't mention his Klingon. Did they mention his Klingon name?
Yeah, they say, well, because like what he's posing as like somebody named Waddle or something.
Yeah.
But when he escapes, they figure out who he is somehow. They look it up and Worf's like, yeah, this is Arn Darvin. Like,
yeah,
he's a disguised Klingon.
Yeah, but they don't say his Klingon name though.
Oh, I see.
I'm saying we know.
I was just assuming that was his Klingon name. Mr. What? Arn Darvin.
Well, because he was Arn Darvin in the Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah, right.
Which we discussed in episode.
Because he was pretending to be a human.
66 of this podcast, which we will introduce in a moment. But yeah, Arn Darvin was his name, his fake human name, and then he had a second fake human name of Mr. Waddle.
Something Waddle.
Mr. Waddle.
David Waddle. Billy Waddle. Robbie. I don't.
So, unless I missed it, I think we didn't hear what his Klingon name was.
Well, the Klingons back then looked like humans, and they had names like Arn Darvin. So, and it was easy to disguise yourself as a human when you look like a human. So.
you think he started?
I figured that was just his name was Arn Darvin.
He was just like,
if he was a human, his name would be Arnie Darvin.
Under your theory, they selected him for this particular spy mission primarily based on the fact that he's got a kind of human sounding name,
yeah.
But not quite. Arn Darvin.
It's like, did you say that the right way? Shouldn't it be say it a different? It doesn't quite sound human.
Honey, you've given birth to a baby boy. What shall we call him, honey? I want to call him Arn Darvin.
It's like, but our last name's Devin.
your last name is Devin.
Yeah, oh, shit.
Sorry to break it to you.
Oh, shit.
Little Arnie. But anyway, so...
He was in a comedy team with his wife.
What, the actor?
Yeah, Charlie Brill.
Charlie Brill, yeah. Charlie Brill is a... relatively well known,
and they played they were on Ed Sullivan the same night as the Beatles, one of the times, maybe the first time for the Beatles.
I recall hearing him talk about hearing somebody talk about that.
They interviewed him for this
somewhat disappointing circumstance of getting undercut by the Beatles.
Yeah,
but okay, so y'all listening out there to all this jibber jabber, you have tuned in to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 68, right after 67, so 68. That's the episode we're doing.
It's Got Star Trek.
And we are discussing Trials and Tribulations, which is the sixth episode of Deep Space Nine's fifth season. And this will conclude our 3 weeks of Tribble Mania. So if you're tuning into this one,
because they don't have any more episodes,
and you're all about them Tribbles, you can listen to the last two, episodes 66 and 67 for the Math Impaired, and you can enjoy other Tribble-related conversations. We'll leave it to you to guess what we discuss in those episodes, or to discover on your own, but they are Tribble-related. That much we can guarantee. Also, unfortunately, Dan's secret mission was... was extended, so he is not joining us this week.
Things got complicated.
But presuming he hasn't been captured or indeed hasn't defected to some other
Can't say who.
Yeah, exactly. Presuming he hasn't done that and hasn't been captured, we'll see him. He'll be joining us again next week. But in the meantime, I thought before we get into the meat of the conversation, I've mentioned before that folks, they leave us messages. We start conversations on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us at It's Got Star Trek at all those places. I'm pulling a curveball and announcing this at the top of the show instead of the end of the show.
Yeah.
You can also reach us at feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. And so I thought, well, you know, we get letters on the feedback at itsgotstartrek.com email address. And we don't read them that often, but I thought tonight we should read at least one.
Natalie was asking about like
letter.
What do people say about the podcast? And I was like, I really don't know because I actually don't keep up with the comments. But Patrick knows, and maybe Dan knows because they actually look at all the different platforms.
And we keep an eye on the Twitter.
So sometimes you will share it with us, just like you're about to do now.
That's like I'm about to do now. And this is a totally real letter too. So this person says, "Dear Dan, Patrick, and Jesse, I'm writing to thank you so much for your podcast. I live in England, and it has been great to listen to you all while we were under lockdown. I no longer have to stress over which episode of Star Trek to watch."
Because they had for real lockdown in England, right?
I just check out what you guys are going to talk about. That's kind. I really missed Dan last week. No offense, Jesse and Patrick, but Dan is my favorite.
Of course.
My question for you all is, this helps. Ask a question. It's great. We love the comments that you think were wonderful and great. That's wonderful. Keep those coming. But it's great if you have question or a comment, and then we can use it on the podcast and mention your name, your totally real name. So he says, "My question for you all is, if we assume Klingons have two knobs, can we also assume they have two bum holes?"
Mm.
Thanks. That's from Johnny Worcestershire from number 3 Tumbling House, Granville, Norton, England, which is a totally real address there. So, Jesse, what do you think? What do you think of this question?
If they got two knobs, do they have two bum holes?
There's a lot of discussion about this idea that we learned from TNG that Klingons have a very redundant set of biological processes, which helped Worf when he had a severe spinal injury that incapacitated him. And this has evolved into people suggesting all manner of wild conceits, such as the idea that Klingons must have two penises if they have such redundant stuff. So I believe this question is jumping off of that, evolving it slightly further, and asking if they have two buttholes or bum holes in the Anglican colloquial style. What do you think? Would there be a point to that? Is that a useful redundancy?
I'm not sure. Yeah, like because I guess if you have some kind of spinal problem and then you need to use your genitals for something, and then if you have your genitals in a slightly different spot, you can use those instead, and it doesn't hurt your back. I don't know why you would need two bum holes.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree. I'm not sure entirely what the
that would be. Maybe you've got two digestive tracts.
I think the follow-up questions would be: do you get to pick which butthole you use, or do you poop out of both?
One's just for fun, and one's for work or something.
Yeah, do you save one, or do you switch them on and off?
One makes funny noises.
Yeah, that's a good question,
One doesn't stink at all. I don't know.
Would they fart in different styles? Right. I don't know.
Yeah, you could. You could have different sounds. One could smell like potpourri.
I suspect this will be a question that remains largely unanswered until geneticists start going a little hog wild in a few years. Once they get tired of curing stuff. I think that the human body can take all sorts of interesting forms that are quite legitimate. I haven't personally read about two buttholes, nor the relative utility or lack thereof.
I've heard about people threatening to make a second butthole.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with those threats as well. Yeah. They're usually directed my way. Tear you a new asshole, Patrick.
Yeah, that guy lives down the street. He's pretty tough. He's always looking at you funny.
I was looking at me. I was like, why are you always looking at my butt?
Needs another one.
Just eyeing my butt.
Yeah, I need to give you another one.
All right, so question time concluded. We'll move on to our discussion of the episode, Trials and Tribulations. So, briefly, for context, for those who are unaware, this show, this now very classic episode of Deep Space Nine, was originally conceived as a way to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Star Trek the original series. It's disturbing to read that from the context of 2021, but it was for the 30th anniversary. And now what was happening elsewhere in the Star Trek universe at this time, First Contact, the first kind of standalone TNG movie, was in production. And then over on Voyager, which had been going for a couple of years at this point, George Takei reprises his role. I can't remember if it was before or after this episode, but he reprised his role as Captain Sulu in Voyager's flashback, which was that's a cool episode of Voyager, and I'm sure we'll get an opportunity to discuss that sometime soon. So the thing is they've got a new movie coming out with the TNG crew. They've got Voyager, which is right at this stage, kind of like the golden baby, whereas Deep Space Nine is the redheaded stepchild or whatever inappropriate term they used in the 90s to refer to it as the show that didn't get as much attention, didn't get as much marketing and all that. So they were trying to figure out what should they do. And, you know, they were thinking, okay, we've already, you know, we had Scotty come on TNG. George Takei is over on Voyager this year. So we don't really want to bring one of the TOS actors on. Because I think that was the sort of default idea. Incorporate a character with the actor from TOS in some fashion. But they didn't want to be repetitive. And then they had this idea that maybe they would go visit the planet from a piece of the action. Which is,
oh right, that's right. I remember
Sigma that. Iota 2, I think, is the planet, yeah. Something like that. And I think there was some traction for that idea, but ultimately they decided they wanted to do something a little bit more fun. And this is right around the time that Forrest Gump came out, a couple years after Forrest Gump. And one of the groundbreaking, quote unquote, groundbreaking things Robert Zemeckis did in Forrest Gump was that he inserted Tom Hanks as Forrest Gump into footage with a number of famous figures, you know, Richard Nixon and Elvis and
LBJ.
LBJ.
When he got his Medal of Honor, yes. LBJ or something.
So, yeah. So basically, you know, inserting him into historic events in a very, using this very clever technique. And they start thinking that they can do this with Deep Space Nine. They can have them go back and visit the trouble with Tribbles and sort of, you know, partake in that. And by all accounts, one of the things that made this concept win out was a fixation a couple of the producers got on trying to explain why in the Trouble with Tribbles, in that now really famous scene of Kirk being covered in tribbles and saying please close that door. They wanted to provide finally an in-universe explanation for why tribbles keep falling on Kirk.
Right. Like one by one.
Cause by apparently that bugged them out a little bit. They're like, I've been wondering from? For years, where are these tribbles coming from? So that
there's like a tribble faucet and it just keeps dripping.
I read multiple accounts on Memory Alpha and Wikipedia and a couple other articles where there seemed to be some consistency around the idea that this was what kind of was one of the things that really helped to get over the edge. They said, not only can we do something fun that celebrates the 30th anniversary of TOS, but we can add to that story in a number of ways. One of them, the key one, being the tribbles thing, but they could also, you know, kind of fill in a few little spots elsewise here. I guess that's the main thing they cover. So that all being said, the very brief plot summary of this, you should have watched this, by the way.
You should have.
You've been assigned the homework. You should watch this. And if you haven't stopped the podcast, go watch it.
Should have done it.
It's a fun episode. It's 43 minutes. You're going to have a good time. But, the the long and the short of it is that this story is told through this framing of Captain Sisko having to undergo sort of interrogation by these Starfleet time cops.
Time cops. Yeah.
It was the Department of Temporal Investigations. Yeah. Of course, with the very funny names of Dulmer and Luxley.
Dulmer.
Which are anagrams of Mulder and Scully.
Oh, snap.
Right? So there's a little joke in there.
Time cops.
The dour time cops chasing Arn Darvin.
Arn Darvin.
Arn Darvin. So the time cops are sitting there with Sisko in his office, and Sisko is basically explaining to them this this situation, this time travel event that they went through, and then the rest of the story is you know told within that framing device, and they go back in time to Station K7 and secretly interact with the Enterprise and with the station, and the guy, the reason they go back there is because this guy Arn Darvin, who they I keep forgetting about this. It's funny because this is such a straightforward, simple episode, but there are all these things. Okay. So first, they go to Cardassia, and then they are picking up an orb.
Bajoran orb.
Now they're under cloak because they don't want to get caught by the Klingons, because there's some shit going down with the Klingons at this stage. While they're picking up the time orb, they also randomly pick up this guy named Arn Darvin, who claims to be a human merchant who got stuck on Cardassia.
Except they're calling him, he's going by a different name.
Mr. Waddle.
Something Waddle.
Barry Waddle?
Barry Waddle. That's exactly, yeah.
So Barry Waddle, who's actually, in fact, Arn Darvin. He gets picked up by then. They start heading back. He opens up the little time orb and figures out how to use it pretty quick, apparently.
Arn Darvin's been hanging out on Cardassia for like 110 fucking years.
He wasn't. He wasn't on Cardassia that whole time. That was one thing that, I've seen this episode a bunch, but I was trying to sort that
Klingons
out.
Klingons live a long time? Everybody's living like at least more than a century now?
Well, I know there's some people who are going to be like...
Curzon Dax?
Will Arn Darvin still be alive at this point? But we know already from Deep Space Nine, going back to, the early season, second season and all that, that Koloth and Kang and I forget the other guy, these Klingons... from the TOS period, they're still alive.
Right.
Until they go into out in glorious battle, but they're still basically alive. So they can, Arn Darvin living this long is not that much of a surprise. My understanding is that Arn Darvin was on Cardassia.
Arn Darvin, you say?
Arn Darvin was on Cardassia selling who knows what, Kievans and doodads.
Fish juice. He's talking about the fish juice.
He was not selling any spike and flame gems.
Yeah.
He stays away from those. But he must have been there on business.
Quattro Triticale.
And then when the Klingons attacked Cardassia, then he got trapped there. So we can presume he's been there at least a few years, if not longer, drinking fish juice for breakfast, missing his Ractogino, his fine Klingon coffee. So he utilizes the time orb, sends it back in time, and that's when they get into their fun adventures on K7, interacting with the crew and all sorts of other crazy stuff happens.
The Ractogino stuff seems to have like a universal appeal in a way that a lot of the other Klingon cuisine is like, people like it because, I'm eating exotic food, but everybody's going into Quarks and getting a Ractogino.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it is interesting that they do enjoy that.
They're not getting them that wormy. They're not eating them worms.
Ractogino, by this point in Deep Space Nine, we're very familiar with it as something that many of the crew order a lot, but, particularly Kira is a big fan, I believe, of Ractogino, and they serve it in those crazy, those cool little Star Trek mugs.
Oh, yeah, my mom had a mug like that back in the 90s.
Funny shape.
those were like
flared out
commuter mugs they made back in the 90s.
Yeah.
The props department picked them up, painted them up.
But it takes on an interesting thing in this episode, because the Ractogino that we've now gotten familiar with from watching Deep Space Nine has somewhat of a role to play in the plot, and certainly in the characterization here, because when he first gets on the ship, on the Defiant, and orders a Ractogino, we don't think twice about it. We know it's Klingon coffee, but everyone's drinking the Klingon coffee. Then we find out he's a Klingon, And then, and so that makes it somewhat more interesting. It's like, okay, well, he's looking for a Klingon coffee. And then, of course, we have this fun, multiple fun interactions with this waitress on K7 who keeps getting annoyed that people keep ordering a Rectagino. Because obviously, Arn Darvin went to K7, tried to order a Rectagino. Then Odo shows up and he's trying to order a Rectagino. And then the Klingons show up and they're all ordering a Rectagino.
Right. The Klingons, and then like there's like, yeah, those Klingons over there and those Klingons over there, and they're like, those are Klingons.
this bar has plenty of Tarkalian tea,
but they don't have any fucking Rectagino.
They don't have Rectagino, and I always wondered why are you going to order Tarkalian tea instead of a Rectagino if they don't have Rectagino? Can't you just get a, you know, Folgers or something?
Yeah, like an Earth coffee, or
get Starfleet issue
an Andorian coffee. Some of that Alpha Centauri coffee.
We know that the Starfleet, we know from Discovery and Voyager and some other places that that Starfleet has a lot of like tomato soup recipes and stuff like that. So they've got to have like all sorts of coffee options. Even back in Kirk's day when they were using those like woo 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 woo.
Yeah, he got the coffee with a tribble in it.
That's right. This is my coffee.
This is my chicken sandwich. My chicken sandwich and coffee.
I'm gonna say everything twice. By the way, we mentioned during our discussion of The Trouble with Tribbles in episode 66 that Kirk does this weird thing where he's like, the what?
Yeah.
I forget what the other thing.
Quadratrigali.
But he says something else twice. So there's a couple times where Kirk.
Like, I don't know, sir.
Somewhat uncharacteristically says the same thing twice. Sisko does the same thing in this episode when, let me see here. Oh yeah, Sisko, towards the end of this episode, he says, storage compartments.
Oh, that's right.
And I was wondering, is that an homage? It's not an homage to Kirk, because Kirk did not have a habit of saying things twice all the time. But anyway, it's just a stray observation that popped out.
Because it's not like anybody actually knew about this historical event, because otherwise they would have been like, oh yeah, that thing with the tribbles they did. Because nobody even really knew what a tribble was, because the Klingons had gotten rid of them.
Yeah,
they'd exterminated them. They sent some warriors to the Tribble homeworld.
I do really
the Tribble homeworld.
We talked about this a little bit last week in episode 67. I really enjoy this positioning of the Klingons, both in the original Trouble with Tribbles as almost a comedic thing. That the Tribbles don't like Klingons, which is that's kind of a lazy joke. If that's as far as it went, but the Klingons also don't like the Tribbles, right? So it's sort of a mutual thing. Yeah. And the Klingons who are portrayed as this fearsome warrior class and, you know, species, and have this warrior ethic to be put off by these Tribbles.
Yeah.
That's a funny joke to begin with. But I think that in this episode, the conversation that Odo has with Worf, where Odo clearly really likes these Tribbles. He thinks they're cute, and he's puzzled as to why this is an issue for Worf. And then Worf gives this nice, you know, he gives a long explanation. But fundamentally, what they've done is they've positioned Klingons as environmental eco warriors.
Yeah, right.
Right, and they've positioned them as the ones having the correct ecological stance on this. Correct. I'll back off from that, because you could argue you don't need to.
Because Scotty beamed all the Tribbles over to their shit.
I know. You can say you don't have to exterminate a whole class of creature.
Or it was Edward. Solve it. Could have been it. Didn't Edward, they put the...
Well, Edward, yeah, in the Trouble with Edward.
They got onto that planet.
They got onto that planet, and in the Inquisition at the end of Trouble with Edward, they mentioned that and we hear they're now in, you know, encroaching on Klingon space.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. They were a little bit vague about that. But it is still funny and interesting, and it does what Deep Space Nine long was good at. As the bulk of what Deep Space Nine was good at was fleshing out characters and world building and character building, even in small little moments here and there. You know, we get with this conversation between Worf and Odo, we learn a lot about both of them.
Yeah,
but we also learn more about the Klingons. We learn more about Tribbles. We know what happened to Tribbles.
Odo likes the Tribbles. Odo is like...
Yeah, Odo's totally...
Odo's the hardest man in the fucking galaxy. Yeah. And like...
He's all like...
He's like, wow, these are all right.
Yeah, he's having fun. Although Odo and Worf are both wearing
as many ridiculous
pirate merchant pockets, just like our man Cyrano Jones.
Worf has that goofy hat on to like cover up his like Klingon upper head.
Yeah, Klingon ridges. It is funny. Although, so we know, you know, Worf talks about them, the Klingons killing all the Tribbles and that they're basically extinct. However, by the end of this episode, the Tribbles have basically been reintroduced into the future. So they never really did anything with that. I guess there's always still the opportunity, maybe in Lower Decks or something. We probably have seen Tribbles in the background here and there periodically. But I would be interested to
Seems
see.
Seems like that's good for Lower Decks.
How often do you need to do a Tribble story for something that is so famous beyond the confines of Star Trek? It's in the culture, the idea of a Tribble. People know the big idea of a Tribble.
For some people that aren't into Star Trek, they know about the Tribble episode. Yeah. That was like a famous just TV thing.
Even if they haven't seen it yet. Yeah. At the same time, Tribbles have not been well represented in Star Trek in a lot of ways, because there's really four installments. There's The Trouble with Tribbles. There's More Tribbles, More Troubles on the animated series. There's The Trouble with Edward, which is the newest one, of course. And then, of course, there's this Deep Space Nine episode. That's it across all the Star Trek franchise. So maybe you just need to wait 20, 30 years periodically to do another Tribble story.
Maybe they'll have Tribbles like in the far future with Discovery.
Yeah. But there could be sentient Tribbles that all form up into some sort of a bipedal creature to interact with.
That's really gross.
I can't do Tribble sounds, sadly.
When they sit down, they squeak.
So this episode celebrates the 30-year anniversary of TOS, as we mentioned. 1996, and TOS premiered in 1966. This premiered on, I believe it was November or something, November 4th, 1996. So that's 30 years. If we were to do a similar episode today, right? So one of the contemporary Star Treks does a similar episode today. They would be doing something from TNG, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If we wait a couple years, maybe you could dip into Deep Space Nine and or Voyager as well. But I was wondering, can you think of an episode of TNG that you think it would make sense to go back to? And, or, Which contemporary series do you think would make the most sense to do it on?
Well, that's a fun question. Because first you got to think about, do you have an episode in mind? You might have an episode.
I don't really have an episode in mind.
That's a hard one.
You know, one thing to consider is, are there any episodes that have, you know, dangling threads that we didn't get to finish up on? Or could it be something with the pack leads? They're always fun.
Hmm.
Or some Q business. I don't know.
I guess the Lower Decks did a kind of a follow up to the pack leads, or at least you got to see what the pack leads were up to.
Yeah.
So maybe that's been taken.
I guess the other thing, you know, like I said, the other thing to consider is which contemporary series would be the one to do it. And I think probably it ends up being Lower Decks, because
Lower Decks or Picard, I guess.
Yeah, Picard.
Just because it would be the same people.
Yeah, Picard could do it. In fact, you know, that would actually make a lot of sense, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's funny that I didn't even consider that. Because I was thinking Discovery.
It's just not going to work with Discovery.
Discovery doesn't work because there's already too much time travel involved.
Yeah,
not too much. I like the time travel in Discovery, but it's just.
I mean, there's a lot of time that's been traveled.
Yeah, and I know you could do holodecks and stuff like that, but then that gets a little too close to the quote unquote series finale to Enterprise, of which we do not try not to speak too much. So Discovery, it's a little problematic. Strange New Worlds might be an interesting angle, because it would be the reverse. It would be going into the future, because again, they would be interacting with TNG people, right? It was some sort of TNG episode. So they would end, Strange New World would in fact be going into the future from their perspective. So that might be a fun angle. If you thought of a, you know, an interesting enough tale, ideally that didn't involve the Borg, because I think there's this obsession with going back to the Borg. I like the Borg, but yeah.
There's more to TNG than just the Borg.
Yes, and Voyager basically took over the Borg stuff anyway, and they went far more in depth into it. But Lower Decks to me could work because it's at that time period. It's it's a little bit after
Nemesis, it's always referencing everything for past Star Trek.
It might fit more organically, and it is animated, so you would have a little bit more freedom. I mean, it almost wouldn't even have to be a special episode at that stage.
But
I don't know. We'll have to put some more thought into this. I think it's an interesting question. That who knows? Maybe it'll become a reality. Maybe Lower Decks is doing precisely that right now.
Yeah. Maybe they've already done it.
Maybe they're celebrating Deep Space Nine and they're getting ready to do that in 2022 or 2023, I should say.
When's the next Lower Decks coming out?
Season 2?
Yeah.
Soon, I guess.
Probably
later.
Soon,
yeah. Sooner or later, I hope.
They're working on Discovery. The next one.
Yes, the next season of Discovery is being filmed. Picard, I think, started filming.
Oh, okay.
I think it might have finally started filming. I think Strange New Worlds might be filming. Could be wrong about that, but
that's cool.
I think
that's brand new.
Yeah. I think there's lots going on. Of course, Star Trek Prodigy is probably largely complete at this stage, and we'll get to see that debut soon. But listeners out there, why don't you let us know on Twitter or Facebook or email? You can get us at It's Got Star Trek or feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. What your thoughts are for if we were to do TNG or Deep Space Nine or even Voyager, what episodes do you think would make sense for a contemporary Star Trek series to go visit in some sense, to interact with them, similar to the Trials and Tribulations episode?
Right. It can't be about Tribbles or the Miri.
Yeah, something. And the other thing would be not just the episode, but what about it makes it, say with TNG, for example, the trouble with Tribbles was one of the, not only classic, but arguably one of the quintessential TOS episodes. So there were others as well. You know, A Piece of the Action is another well-known episode. There, of course, there's a lot of them. So there's always options. But you got to pick that episode that is going to be fun to revisit and fun to learn more about what happened, but also that represents, say, TNG. There's like a TNG-ness to it.
Right, exactly.
Because I think one thing that was great about this episode was not just that it was a loving homage and all that, but that they took so much effort, and I expect a lot of money, to rebuild these TOS Enterprise sets and rebuild the K7 bar set, right?
Yeah.
And it had to really be...
like the colors and the lighting, and even it may have just been my imagination, but even the sound, the way they sounded when they were speaking, it sounded like TOS. It didn't sound like it sounded for TNG or DS9 or Voyager.
I agree.
It was that older TV sound. It was
when they were on that area. Yeah, exactly.
When they're walking in the corridor and stuff.
Yeah.
Or the turbo lift.
And the dimensions, especially when you consider the bar on K7, that the dimensions of the bar, I'm sure there was some leeway, but because they had to match it up to existing footage, and obviously there are a number of tricks and shortcuts that go into that, but there had to be so much planning to go into this in order to make it come out looking as smoothly as it does. And again, this is 1996, and it remains an incredibly impressive visual achievement.
Like, this is the kind of stuff that like the production people like really get into, the people that build the sets and stuff. I'm sure they were like, this is awesome, like we're totally redoing this stuff. And all the art people and production people,
as a challenge,
crew, as they would call them.
I do imagine that this was such a wonderful opportunity for the production crew to flex their creative muscles.
They remade that hatch that opens up only part of the way and leaves that spiky bit out.
And they hired a bunch of extras too.
Yeah.
A lot of extras, to get that Dax makes the point when they first come over to the Enterprise about how they really packed them in.
Oh, yeah.
They really packed them in back then. And it's true. When you watch TOS,
there's a ton of people walking around. There's
people just milling back and forth, and, you know, it's just like, oh, I got to be here. There's
those people in the shorts walking around in that first episode.
Yes. There's always sorts of fun stuff going out there. And then once we get back in time, I mean, you know, the plot, if you really break down the plot is pretty, pretty bog standard, as Dan would say.
Is this your thing now?
The plot is, you know, time travel. Guy wants to get revenge and rewrite history in his favor. He puts a bomb in a tribble, you know, your standard business. And he's trying to kill Captain Kirk. We at no point think he's going to kill Captain Kirk. It just doesn't make sense within the context of the story.
We know what happens.
We know what happens. The point of this is to have fun with these characters interacting in this time period, making observations that maybe fans would have made, and playing little sort of gags with the conceit, with this particular time travel conceit. One thing I loved was the whole thing with O'Brien mistaking that fella for Captain Kirk. And the meta joke is that was, as I recall, you mentioned
a couple weeks ago. That was Shatner's stunt double.
Exactly. Yeah. That was William Shatner's stunt double. So that's the meta joke there, that he's like, no, of course that's Captain Kirk.
And then Bashir's like, well, he's got lieutenant's stripes. Yeah, I know. But like a couple scenes before that, Bashir's like, I don't know anything about this time period. Because he's like, why are you guys wearing different colors?
Yeah.
Like,
maybe he learned enough just to understand.
Maybe he knows about the ranks, I guess. Yeah. Maybe they still use that in their dress uniforms.
So. Yeah. Well, that, of course, leads to the fight scene, which, as Dan said a couple of weeks ago, is really one of the, you know, on the Trouble with Tribbles is one of the best fight scenes in Trek. It's just so vibrant and active and fun, with extra choreography, the with chairs. Cyrano Jones, carrying the drink around. And here you double down on that, because now you're putting these new characters we love and have followed, you know, Odo and Bashir and O'Brien and all them. You're getting them involved in that same fight and mimicking it really quite well, I think.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have these Klingons. The Klingon costumes were great. I mean, it was hard at times, if you're not squinting your eyes real close, to tell which ones were modern Klingons. I mean, quote-unquote, like, you know, 1996 actors with their goofy hair versus the 1966 actors. I thought they did a really good job of blending all that in, along with the colors and things. The hair in particular, the Klingon, the goofy, weird 60s Klingon hair was, I found particularly entertaining.
I like that Bashir and O'Brien had like some funny 60s hair thing going on. That was pretty funny too. It was all like, they like put some mousse in it or something and like flattened it out. And
Bashir's hair in particular looked stupid.
It looked really goofy. But then there's like that other officer that's like giving him the eye in the turbo lift, and she's like, oh yeah, I have my physical tomorrow.
Yeah. 1300. Lieutenant Whatley.
Yeah, right.
A great scene. I liked it because, you know, one issue you have sometimes when you go back in time for media generally, including Star Trek, is there can be inappropriate over sexualization of women, mostly women. And yeah, there's a hint of that here, but it's not really played in that way. It's played more in a making fun of Bashir, horny Bashir, who's trying to figure out, you know, horny Bashir, who in this case, the writers really had fun here, because Bashir encounters this woman. He says he's a doctor. She basically is flirting with him, saying, I'm going to get my physical tomorrow. And, tells him her name.
Means you're gonna like take some like little thing and like wand it around. She's not gonna take any clothes off.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
It's a golden age of science.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a weird way to flirt to begin with. But Bashir says, and they didn't have to do this, by the way. They could have just had this be Bashir like wanting to flirt with and have sex with this attractive Lieutenant Whatley, and that could have been the game they played with this, and O'Brien saying like, no, you can't do that could mess with the timeline. Your semen could mess with the timeline.
He's like, wait a minute, this is my grandmother.
And yeah, well, that's what's so funny about it is he says, my grandmother's name was Wadley, and no one knew her dad. What if I have to have sex with her, otherwise I'm not born? That's insane, because it's
he jumped right to that shit.
Not only did he jump to it, it's a bizarre subversion of the whole concept of the, you know, going back in time and killing your grandparents and then you're not born. So that's an old philosophical conundrum slash trope from time travel discussions. And in this case, Bashir has twisted it such that he's justifying having sex with a woman because she might be his grandmother or great grandmother, I should say. That's bizarre. It's not, oh, I shouldn't have sex with this woman on the off chance she's my grandmother.
It's like, I have to
have sex with her.
Otherwise, I might never be born.
I'll fucking disappear like Marty McFly. Inexplicably, fade away. Take a picture. Watch me fade away.
He's like the horniest Star Trek guy, right?
Like, I think
it's like Riker doesn't need to be horny because the chicks are just kind of throwing themselves at him all the time.
Yes.
Like Bashir's like got some weird personality stuff. And so sometimes it lands and sometimes it doesn't. And
sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. He does a little bit better than Geordi. And he's better as the series goes on. I mean, I know this is season 5, but so I guess he still has some growing to do. He was a real goof in the first season. He was salivating all over Dax and all that. So the costume and hair design, we talked a little bit with the Klingons, but it's also really great for the most part with all the extras and stuff. In fact, it's better with the extras, save for Dax. Dax's hair, they did a great job with making it look like the late 60s style.
Yeah.
O'Brien's hair is fine. It just looks like
it's just goofy O'Brien.
He looks like he took a shower and forgot to wash out the conditioner.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if they put pomade or something in there or some other greasy
Brill cream.
Stuff. Brill cream. That's Charlie like... Brill cream.
Arn Darvin.
Arn Darvin.
You got some of that Arn Darvin in your hair?
Arn Darvin. Slather the Arn Darvin all over. And of course, we commented, Bashir's hair looks ridiculous. Sisko just looks like Sisko.
He doesn't have no hair.
Sisko is just walking around. He's like, I'm Captain Sisko. What's wrong with all you people? The rest of you are all acting
Worf
goofy.
Gets to wear a hat.
Worf wears his cool.
Odo doesn't really have hair.
I wonder if Worf replicated that hat or if that was a hat he got from his parents.
Yeah, right. it looks like some kind of Ukrainian.
It does. Maybe his brother.
I think his dad was wearing that hat in that episode where his dad comes to visit. I think that's the same fucking hat.
It looks very similar. Yeah. We'll have to double check on that because that would be hilarious if that was the same hat. But yeah, the costume and hair design is really good. There are a bunch of little...
Dressed like an asteroid prospector.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little tidbits in here. Like David Gerrold, who was the guy who wrote the original Trouble with Tribbles, and he wrote... More Tribbles, More Troubles for the animated series.
Yeah.
He's an extra in this episode. He plays a TOS Enterprise crewman, and at one point you see him kind of petting a tribble in the corner. He's just like an older looking guy. He's got like grayish hair in the background. You have to kind of go out of your way. You can look at screen caps online and search for them. Or you can just keep your eyes peeled and see if you can guess who he is. But that was fun that they included the fella who came up with Tribbles.
He requested that, I think. He like called up the producers and...
Well, he did the same thing when he requested writing that story for the animated series.
Yeah.
So here's a tip for creatives out there.
Keep bugging people.
Keep fucking calling people up and being like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it. Let me do it. I'll write about Tribbles, whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
I'll write all about it. So he's in there and the tribble he's petting is a prop from the original show.
That's right. Yeah.
So a lot of the tribbles, the majority of the tribbles you see in this episode are newly crafted tribbles, but, there are a couple appearances and that's one of them of an original tribble prop that had survived.
Cause by that time they had probably, auctioned off a lot of them and they're in private collections. It wasn't like they just had a bunch of tribbles hanging around.
Yeah, no, they
may have been. Was that when was the Smithsonian? Not at the Air and Space Museum. When was that Star Trek thing?
Around that time.
It seemed like it would have been somewhere around
when
there.
That opened up for the first time. I want to say something like that.
So I think they had tribbles. The
Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in sunny Washington D.C.
Mm.
Worth a visit when you grow up in or around Washington D.C. You get
to go there every fucking week.
You get really used to free world class museums.
Yeah,
and it makes you very bitter
when you go around the world and you go to world class museums.
You go to London, New York, Paris.
Can you please pay us $20?
Yeah, I know. It's like
what?
Did we have 20 euros so you could come look at our paintings?
It's like this is a museum.
Can't I just smoke a joint and wander around? I come from DC. You just smoke a joint outside.
Walk
around the museum.
Paying my taxes.
In high school once, we skipped school and we went to the Air and Space Museum. We actually went to a number of museums, but we started at the Air and Space Museum.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what you do when you skip school and you're a nerd. You're like, oh, let's go to the museum. I'm going to go to the United States Building
let's
Museum.
Let's go to the National Gallery.
The National Portrait Gallery is actually pretty cool. Yeah. All of them are cool.
It's all good and they're free.
Free.
Come to D.C.
Come to D.C.
It's free.
Next time you're coming this way, come to DC. Well, you call us up or write us on Twitter.
They have the Skylab practice model.
We'll give you some tours.
They used to practice Skylab.
Y'all want
to
see a space shuttle for real though?
They got this some space shit
for real though. That's at the Udvar Hazy.
Yeah, they got that Udvar Hazy shit, and I've never been there, but that's where they have like big jets and
all the big stuff that they couldn't fit in the main museum.
Yeah.
But in any case,
Spirit of St. Louis, that's at the Air and Space Museum.
Yes, it is.
Because it's little. You can fit it. It's just hanging from the ceiling.
So, Lumler, I keep wanting to say like Scalder and Moldy, Scumly, Dulmer and Luxley.
Luxley.
Dulmer and Luxley. What did you think of these two have cats?
One of those guys I know I've seen, and then it turns out the other guy has actually been in a lot of stuff too. But I didn't know their name, but I knew I saw those guys. But they're totally like, you know, it's exactly what you would think from Time Cops. They have absolutely no sense of humor. Everybody's making time jokes, and they're just like, we don't. You better, just stop.
I like when
they don't like any of this.
At one point, Sisko's like, "This may." They're asking him to tell the story, and he says, "This may take some time." And
yeah,
is that a joke? And he's like, "No."
Yeah, he's like, "No, that's not a joke." Good. We don't like jokes.
Sisko has a lot of great lines throughout this, and he's not even the main focus. I mean, it is fairly evenly distributed amongst most of the characters, save for Kira, I found it kind of funny that Kira's at the end of the show. It's weirdly uncharacteristic for Star Trek. I know Star Trek has fond of its technobabble solutions and you know, they wrap everything up at the end, but it was really funny to have this whole big adventure and then all of a sudden at the end, just Sisko saying like, by that point, Kira had figured out how to work the time orb. And it just shows her opening it and closing it. And she's like, okay.
Because she's Bajoran.
And that's the extent. I mean, obviously it can't be that hard to utilize if Arn Darvin of all people who hadn't set eyes on it presumably was able to use it and take it exactly back in time to where he needed to be traveling across both time and space, by the way.
I know. Yeah, right? Cuz they were like
200 light years,
light years, yeah.
More, you know, probably closer to the Klingon space cuz that's where
K7.
At least the old borders of the Klingon space. I know it's an influx at this stage in...
That's like on the other side of the quadrant from Deep Space Nine. And Cardassia.
Like. I don't know. It's not that... It's far, but not that far. It's always... Yeah, it depends on which map you're looking at, of course. Because they change stuff over...
They do have a couple of those.
Over time. We know from The Trouble with Tribbles that K7 is near Klingon space.
I just figured the Klingons are sort of more towards the Beta quadrant.
I think they are, yeah. I think most folks are more towards the Beta quadrant.
Yeah.
So, but the wormhole,
I always got the idea that the Cardassians and the Bajorans and the wormhole are sort of on the other side of the Alpha quadrant. But
yeah, I think they're all kind of clustered around that.
It's all, you know,
that Alpha Beta quadrant thing. Yeah, it's all made up too.
There's all kinds of it's all made up. And you got three dimensions and stuff. And, you know.
So they go 105 years into the past.
The map is not the territory.
200 light years away. We have some very good lines from Sisko. We already mentioned, you know, the storage compartment. He put a bomb in a tribble. It made me think of, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean. I really also enjoyed Sisko chasing Dax away from Spock, because the gag they play is that Spock and Kirk are talking, and Sisko and Dax are nearby. Dax is all starstruck and eye fucking these, you know, somebody over there, and Sisko assumes naturally that she is looking at Kirk, and then she corrects him and says, "Nah, I'm looking at Spock. He's more handsome." But after that, that's a cute little joke. But again, like they've done in some of these other installments, they make the fun joke and then they just push it over to excellence by adding a little thing. And in this case, it's Sisko closes the panel and is like, "Let's go." And he just, it's kind of like he's dealing with a child almost. He's like, "All right, let's go. We're not going to get any work done here as long as Spock is nearby. So we got to get you out of here, because otherwise you're going to jump on this dude."
Because before she found out about the Klingon guy, and it turned out that Curzon Dax had known the Klingon guy. Sisko was like, we're not going over there because, you know, you're going to give us away.
She wanted to go talk to Koloth.
And then she recognized McCoy from when Emini Dax?
Yes, Emini.
Dax was at Ole Miss doing some kind of thing back in the day.
She was judging a gymnastics tournament.
Even though nobody knew about the Trill back then.
So, Emini, well, yeah, yes and no. See, that's the retcon, right? Because TNG, right? Nobody knew what the fuck was going on with the Trill. But
Discovery knows about Trill.
And it basically, on Deep Space Nine, they retconned it and said, this is more interesting. If these people live a long time, it's more interesting if they've interacted with everybody for a long time. And it is. So her going, I can accept that she goes to Ole Miss University in Mississippi and sees Dr. Leonard McCoy, presumably as an undergrad. They don't specify how old her host is or how old her host presents as at this time, but we will assume it's all in good order and nothing uncouth.
Everybody had a good time, I think.
But that is, of course, a classic thing when she mentions that he had the hands of a surgeon. I always get it wrong. I think I always say, like, he had clinical hands.
He had delicate fingers.
He had a robot's finger. It's somewhat less sexy than what she actually said. It was like the hands of his
He had a penis hanging off of him.
I know, that seems to...
That's what doctors do. They have penises.
One would be forgiven if we sometimes think that high up in the priority of what Dax is looking for. I'm sure that's not the case. I'm sure she has all sorts of interests, but Rick Berman produced show. So in the end, you know,
guys, a little iffy.
They portray her as being a little rascally, which is no problem. I think it's important to be sex positive. So I try to view it in that, from that perspective, that Dax is just a very sex positive person. And that's why she's trying to jump on Spock and, already is recalling fond memories of presumably getting fingered by Dr. McCoy when he was 18 or 19.
We can only assume.
Pardon my French. Storage compartment. Sorry. There was another, you know, fun little line when Bashir, you referenced it, hinted at it earlier, Jesse, when Bashir says, "I'm a doctor, not a historian." Right? You know, that's a McCoy. That's a play on the McCoy. I'm a doctor, not a X. And so Bashir, who is the doctor, says, "I'm a doctor, not a..." he says not an historian, because he's speaking British style, like the same place that Johnny Worcestershire, Johnny Worcestershire, Johnny, who lives at number three, what does he live at? He lives at number three, Tumbling House, Granville Norton, England. Johnny Worcestershire.
Where is it?
It's nowhere. It's
Granville Norton.
Granville Norton. You look it up.
I want to.
You look it up. And Kirk had 17 separate temporal violations. That was according to Dumbler and Luxley. So that's something we learn. I saw this episode when it aired. I would have been 16 years old at the time, not to age myself. And I recall at the time hearing that and thinking, I want to look at that. I want to look that up. I want to look up if that number 17 is correct. I want to know if you factor in Star Trek IV and The City on the Edge of Forever, you know, and all that jazz. Like, I wanted to see if it added up to 17 temporal violations. But this was, you know, in the early days of the internet, when it was largely useless. You already had Usenet forums and stuff like that, so you could communicate with people, you could ask questions, but in terms of databases, finding out stuff, it was tricky because, well, the way we watched Star Trek is some of us had VHS, most of us didn't. Most of us watched it when it was on the TV and airing, just shooting out at our eyeballs, and that's when we got it or didn't get it.
I usually saw it in reruns. I didn't actually always see it when it aired initially.
I mean, most of TNG and most of TOS and TAS I saw in reruns as well, but once I got into Star Trek and then when Deep Space Nine premiered, that was sort of the first one I got to see. I had already started watching TNG, you know, as regularly as one could in those days, because again, if you miss an episode, you just pretty much have to wait until they decide to show it again. But I did follow along with Deep Space Nine from its premiere. And so I was wondering about that, but at the time I didn't have the tools necessary to look that stuff up. And I have, of course, in the intervening years, seen this episode, I think a conservative estimate is maybe 20, 25 times, if not more than that, in various contexts and for various reasons and with varying levels of attention being paid to it. But I will say consistently across all those many viewings, I again hear this line that Kirk has 17 temporal incursions, and I think temporal violations, and I think, is that number correct? And I haven't looked it up.
It's like, totally, it's believable. When he says it.
I could look it up right now while we're podcasting. I could look it up, and I'm not going to.
Cause he says it and you're like, oh yeah, that's hilarious. Because of course, like, yeah, they were, you know, Star Trek, they're always popping around in time. I mean, if you have to think about, okay, well, when did they actually do it? Then I can think of Star Trek IV.
Well, and the question then is if you're a writer and you're writing this line and you're like, okay, we want to have these guys, these temporal time cops, hate on Kirk because that's funny, and they're time cops, so that's why they would hate on him, because he time traveled a lot and caused a ruckus through the time zones and the timelines, and of course, this is before Enterprise, so this is before the concept of the temporal Cold War, which is then, you know, before further Discovery. Elucidated in Star Trek Discovery Season 3. So this is before all that. So this is just to be a funny joke. So now they got to come up with a number. Now, the number, they could come up with a number by going through the lore and counting up the amount, right? That's one method. They could report the actual on-screen evidence of temporal violations, right? But then you think, okay, but should we allow for the fact that there may have been some temporal violations that we didn't see? Or maybe the amount that had been shown on screen is not a funny enough number, right? Like, if it's six, that's not funny. 17 is funny because
he's had over six temporal violations.
People would be like, six, what the fuck? It's a single digit number. 17 is a prime number.
Yeah.
It's almost 20, right? 20 would almost be ridiculous, but 17 is a nice odd number, prime number. You know, it's got a lot of factors going to it. The other thing is there's the books. You know, maybe you want to leave room because there's a bunch of books written, so you don't know how many time travel stories are going to be. But I'm just saying that I think it's complicated business coming up with the appropriate number that will be funny, close to accurate, and justified in some fashion, lest the hordes of we fans, you know, chase the writers down and tear them to pieces for getting something slightly wrong. So that, I mean, that about covers it for me from my perspective. I think I got most of my tidbits in there, my odds and ends.
Anything, yeah, I think so.
Anything else?
There's O'Brien says thousands.
Thousands, yeah.
and then somebody else says thousands, and that was kind of funny that Colmeany was being super Irish.
Colmeany is fun in this episode.
Yeah.
I think he does a really good job.
Yeah.
He seems almost the most relaxed of all of the, not only the characters, but the actors. You know, he seems very comfortable wandering around in this strange environment.
Or I like when he's like, he has that panel open and like, he's like, I can't figure any of this thing out. It's all wired off herky jerky.
And then Bashir is like, I don't know what to do. Bashir looks like, that looks like one of your repair jobs, which is kind of true. He does. O'Brien does like beating up on the equipment. I did read an interesting, apparently I did read that, Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov, came to visit the set.
Oh, I read that too.
When they were filming this and in production, and supposedly he was giving some instruction on how to properly interact with the bridge set.
Yeah, for example, with the equipment. Isn't that funny?
On the bridge set.
I read that. That's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah,
funny concept for actors to.
And I did enjoy the part where Sisko has that little end tag where he's like, well, okay, we've resolved everything, but, you know, I went and talked to Kirk. Part of what's funny about that, okay, first of all, it's great that they do it because you would expect somebody to do it. It's fun that they have Sisko do it because the entire episode, it's Sisko who's being a hard ass with everyone about, like, not fucking up the timeline, right? He's all serious about that.
Yeah, because like Dax was about to screw with the timeline like three times.
Yeah. She was gonna make Spock babies.
She was gonna talk to Koloth. She could have just started talking to Leonard McCoy.
Yes, there was a bunch that she could have done. So it's funny that it's him doing it, right? So that's, and it's not out of character, by the way. This is something that Sisko has done before, where he's in many ways a do as I say, not as I do kind of fellow.
He's a bit morally ambiguous sometimes.
For better or worse, whatever your preference.
For better.
Yeah, I think for better. I think it was fun.
For better.
It's also great from the perspective of representing the fans, right? So Sisko, of course, Avery Brooks is playing Sisko, but he's also playing Sisko as a stand-in for the fans of this franchise who are celebrating and reveling in this 30 years of a franchise. Now it's 55 years, right? So that's fun too. But for me, probably the most interesting and kind of hilarious part about this scene is that obviously they have to use old footage to make this work. And in this case, they're using footage of Kirk talking to a female, I believe, I can't remember if it was an ensign or what role she played, but I believe he's talking to a female and a woman. And a female.
We call them women today.
Human females. Kirk is talking to a human female. Yes, he's talking to a lovely young woman in the original version. And they superimpose Avery Brooks as Sisko in that scene to, you know, to complete the interaction. You know, it's a little more complicated than that, but that's basically what's happening. So I kind of think it's funny because Kirk's smirk is slightly flirtatious, in my view. I might be reading too much into that, but I think so. So I always watch that scene as Sisko getting a signature from Kirk and talking to him and saying how great it was to work for him.
Right.
And
it's an honor.
And Kirk's like,
thanks.
Not saying, barely saying any word back, just looking at him like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, right.
Hey there. Hey there, Sisko. You're looking pretty good. You do look better with the shaved head and the goatee. You're right.
Sisko is an interesting character in a way because, okay, he's not Kirk and he's not Picard. And so you already have this universe that is established, and then Deep Space Nine is this other thing that's happening in the universe. So in a lot of ways, you know, he's like this other, you know, he's a character that's been, you know, Picard is like killed his wife. Like, you know, like he's been,
yeah, I know,
he's,
right?
He's, you know, he's
Jennifer Sisko.
You know what I'm saying? Like
Locutus of Borg.
He's the first character. He's the first captain that's not Kirk or Picard, obviously, you know, but it's sort of like, in a lot of ways, you know, he represents Star Trek as a thing that's developed culturally, and you know, it's complex. And now you have
developed,
you
know,
you have a third show that's different from the other shows. And you know, we've talked about Deep Space Nine, and we're gonna keep talking about it. But yeah, like you, because you were saying like how you just mentioned how Sisko was like the audience in a lot of ways. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. And this is the era where Trek starts to question some of the assumptions, the cultural assumptions that are built into the fabric of Star Trek. One of them being this idea of the Federation as the good guys.
Right.
Without any question of that. Now, they might still be the good guys in Deep Space Nine, but they are, undermined is not the right word, but there are more questions asked, largely because we see perspectives and representation from outside of the Federation context. We're on a Cardassian space station that's been repurposed to serve a Bajoran planet. The Bajorans are a highly religious people.
The Federation isn't the main character there. Right. They're a character
Quark
in the story.
Quark is a Ferengi, right. And he's not part of Starfleet or anything like that. In fact, you know, of course, Odo, you know, another outsider view, but unlike
it's like if you were playing a Star Trek role playing game and you had your own thing going set in this universe. That's what Deep Space Nine is. It's this other side story.
And what one thing that's fun about Deep Space Nine is even with a lot of the Federation characters, whereas other Trek incarnations, TOS, TAS, TNG, I think Voyager. I think this is largely true of Enterprise. Those were shows that they would have an outsider perspective, but it was usually one, maybe two characters, and then some characters might have a partial outsider perspective. I'm not denigrating those shows and those characterizations they offered, but they were largely Federation-centric, even on Voyager, when the whole premise is that it's the Maquis and the Starfleet. Almost instantly, the Maquis are absorbed into the crew and wear Starfleet uniforms and act like Starfleet, right? But on Deep Space Nine, they sort of flip it. So instead of Spock or Data or Neelix or Phlox serving in those roles, you know, or T'Pol as the outsider perspective, commenting on the Federation perspective, you have a whole station of outsiders. And it's the Federation who is kind of the outsider in this case, right? They're coming in. This is a new environment for them. As part of Sisko's job is essentially gaining a foothold here.
It's the frontier.
It is a frontier town, and so it offers both the people who are on the station who are non-Starfleet, non-Federation people, as well as the Federation people, plenty of opportunities to sort of question what's going on. And in Trials and Tribulations, it's a fun episode, but it is coming at it from the Deep Space Nine perspective. It's a fairly slight and simple story as compared to the majority of Deep Space Nine storylines and plots, but you know, it's got the Bajoran, you know, the time orb.
Yeah,
and
that's like the craziest orb yet.
It is, and a revenge.
Time is some fucked up shit, man.
Arn Darvin is back. You know,
Charlie Brillcream.
There's not a lot of political stuff going on here. Now, the trouble with Tribbles was already, as we commented in episode 66, it's already somewhat interesting in that in the context of the 60s, they're talking about the importance of growing agriculture, developing agriculture and other industries on Sherman's planet. And the purpose is it's a Cold War purpose. It's an analog to the real life Cold War between the US and the allies in the West versus the Soviets and their allies. And in the Trouble with Tribbles, it's the Federation and the Klingons who are representing that. So that's a very interesting geopolitical thing, but it's still from the perspective that the Federation they're the good guys, right? Whereas in Deep Space Nine, that's somewhat awkward because Deep Space Nine, they're not necessarily. We already have had lots of bad admirals on TNG and other things. But Deep Space Nine in particular is asking those questions about, like, you know what? Is this whole like sort of empire where we go around with our replicators and...
Right.
And don't help people unless they have warp drive for some reason, because we say that that's morally wrong. I don't know. Because there's a lot of stuff to debate, and it's not that people weren't asking those questions before. It's just that the stories were not structured as often to allow those questions. It's not that they didn't exist on TNG or even TOS, but it was an aberration as opposed to sort of the common theme.
It's like, you know, that we know the Cardassians are bad guys in a sense, but then like you learn more about the Cardassians and they're not like bad. I mean, they did some horribly brutal shit to the Bajorans but you know, they're not necessarily bad culturally or whatever. Like, they're not bad people you have to exterminate. They're not like,
and we're in the era, this is season five, of course, but this is the big, you know, sort of the, in the midst of Deep Space Nine, exploring this idea, not only of questioning some of the previously assumed ideals of the Federation, but also testing the Federation in the context of war and threat to their territory. Can they maintain these ideals? And Deep Space Nine shows in a lot of cases they don't. I know that often the end of the story is here's we're going to find a way to do it. But sometimes, like in The Pale Moonlight, for example, I mean, that's it's a hard decision is made, and it's a decision that is 100% debatable. Some people will say there's easy answers for all these things. Sisko did the right thing or the wrong thing in any given situation, but it's complicated, and it's part of that is because of the being tested by strife. It's easy to be a saint in paradise. That's a pretty standard old conception. So, but the, this one, Trials and Tribulations, is a fun little diversion from all that, because they do focus on having a good time and letting these characters explore this particular part of the Star Trek franchise, and add a little bit to it, fluff it up a little bit, and just put on a good show that still holds up to this day.
I like it when Dax has like the tricorder and she's like, oh, I used to have one of these. Yeah. This is so great. This whole time period, it's all like nice and black and there's like shiny and it's got these silver highlights.
And the way they filmed that also, the way they
just like, what's your problem?
The way they directed it was as if it was on The Price is Right.
Yeah.
Something about the lighting and the way Dax was holding it when the camera, you know, and she's brushing it with her hand. Yeah. She's very like, Price is Right showcase model.
It's like on like Lower Decks when they're like, oh, I hope they got some of them old like clamshell tricorders. And they're like, oh, those are cool. Oh,
yeah. Or in Discovery season 3 when they're trying to sell some of the Discovery's equipment as antiques, and they're like, it's in really good shape. And if it was how is this in such a good shape? If you haven't seen Discovery season 3, go check it out.
You got to.
It'll make more sense. All right. So I think that'll do it for
this
us.
This whole podcast will make more sense.
I think that'll do it for us this week. Next week, we are planning on discussing a Voyager episode, Timeless, Season 5, Episode 06, Timeless, Voyager. Voyager is a real big fan of these single word titles, which I find somewhat aggravating. That was things moved in that direction for a while.
It's which season?
Season 5, Episode 6. So it's latter day, you know, later on in the Voyager run, when they really started. I mean, I like Voyager. There's pluses and minuses to me. It's not my favorite Trek, but I think it's
got good stuff.
It's got a lot of good stuff in there. It's 100% worth watching right from the beginning. There are a lot of interesting things that go on there, and this one is, I won't get too into it because we'll talk about it next week, but involves Harry Kim and, you know, Geordi LaForge.
He plays the clarinet.
There's some timey-wimey type, time travel-y sort of kind of stuff going on. It's an interesting story. It's really interesting. A lot of people have compared it to the City on the Edge of Forever in terms of sort of context or plot line, but also quality. A lot of people, and it sounds hard, it's really difficult sometimes when you're comparing things to things that are considered classic, not only within a franchise, but talk about The Trouble with Tribbles. The City on the Edge of Forever is another episode of Star Trek that is classic even beyond fans of the franchise. It's something you'll see shown in film classes and things like that, right? So that's what we'll be talking about, Timeless. In the meantime, you can, I'm filling in for Dan there. In the meantime, definitely get in contact with us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. If you want to write us any letters or have any comments or pose any interesting questions about
totally
Klingon buttholes,
ask more questions or anything about that stuff.
definitely write into us and let us know what you think we would do. If we'll constrain it a little bit. If we were going to do an episode of where we, if we were going to go back to an episode of TNG and have a contemporary Star Trek series do something similar to the Trials and Tribulations episode, and we were going to go back 30 years to a TNG episode, let us know which TNG episode you think would be fun to revisit, and which of the current Star Trek series, current or upcoming Star Trek series, you think would make the most sense to do that. So you can definitely send that in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, or follow us and write us on Twitter @itsgotstartrek. You can get us at Instagram there as well. We're on YouTube. I know a lot of people love YouTube for podcast stuff. So please go to YouTube, subscribe, check it out and subscribe. Even if you're not going to pay attention to it, subscribe. It helps us. Leave a review. If you can, leave a review on iTunes and whatnot, all these other things. By all accounts, that's supposed to be helpful. You want to help us out? You help us out, we'll help you out. That much I can promise, right? So you can give a review. I don't know. Is there anything else I forgot? I probably could cover most of that business.
They could do something with Moriarty from TNG.
Oh, you're just you're coming up with sections.
This is the end of the podast bonus. I'm answering the question.
I would be down. I believe the actor who plays Moriarty is still around.
So hell
they could,
yeah.
They could even keep him. Maybe he goes back in time to do something.
Oh, he could go back in time to that show with Anson Mount.
Brave New World.
Yes.
Strange New World. Brave New World.
That's a book or something.
We're trying to
no,
avoid that.
Yeah. That sounds bad.
Aldous Huxley. Yeah. So let's avoid a Brave New World. Let's look forward to Strange New Worlds. And we look forward to hearing back from you. We look forward to talking at you again sometime around a similar time next week, or of course in the future, because podcasts are permanent and our podcasts
timeless.
Are evergreen. You can listen to them in any order you want. You don't gotta listen to this shit in particular order.
No, there's no order.
Any order you like.
Everything's happening simultaneously.
There might be a little bit of a bonus. There might be a bonus if you listen to order, but not much. Not one that's worth.
Only if you're like a true It's Got Star Trek, like, you know.
Yeah.
Head.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those gags where if you like piece together like the starting word from all the podcasts, like it spells out a code and then you win $10,000. That'd be cool. Should have thought of that.
Whoa.
About 68 episodes ago. Yeah.
I know, right?
maybe we'll implement some sort of similar scheme moving forward in the future. But in the meantime,
we got t-shirts.
Yes, we do. We do have t-shirts, but you're not going to get them. Unless you write us and ask real fucking nice. We'll sell them to you for $1,000. I think I've got like 5 of those left.
Wow, that's tight.
Yeah, all right. If you write us and offer us $1,000, we'll send you a t-shirt. Can't guarantee
$1,000.
Can't guarantee it'll be the size you need. $1,000 is the opening bid. If you want to send in a smaller offer.
Is that a t-shirt with me on it, or is that a t-shirt with Dan speaking Klingon?
Both. We have both.
Either.
We got pictures with Dan and you. You got to get one with my wicked old mug put on there. But otherwise, we will talk to you next week when we cover Timeless from Voyager. Until then, have a good night.
Boop, 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 boop.
Leonard McCoy. I met him when he was a student at Old Miss.
Who met him, Curzon?
No, my host at the time was Emily. She was on Earth judging a gymnastics competition. I had a feeling he'd become a doctor. He had the hands of a surgeon.